opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of Salem Communications, staff, management, or advertisers.
Activist Radio is on the air.
You've tuned in to the Mark Harrington Show, sponsored by Created Equal.
Mark is training a new generation of leaders
to take on the culture of death and win. All right!
If you don't like abortion, don't have one.
The only thing that can be said to be objective truth is that there is no objective truth.
It does come out in one piece. It comes out in one piece.
I would argue that we certainly are not all created equal.
And now, here's Mark.
An example of raw judicial power. Usurping the role of the state legislatures. Supreme Court becoming a super legislature and legislating from the bench. Those are all things that have been said in regard to the decision of Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton. And since then, there are other cases I would say that would fit into the category. But those are the kinds of things that have been said over the years about the decision of Roe versus Wade. And we're going to talk about Roe v. Wade today. And you might think, well, Mark, you know, the decision is now 42 years old. I mean, haven't we discussed that enough? Is there anything new? How could there be anything new at this point? Well, there actually are some things that we need to discuss that don't get discussed very often. And because we continue to try to figure out a way to chip away at Roe versus Wade and eventually have it reversed at the Supreme Court level and the issue be brought back to the states, that would end up in a human life amendment to the U.S. Constitution, obviously it's still important that we understand. And my guest today is Clark Forsythe. And Clark is an author, and he's written a book called The Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe versus Wade. He also works with the Americans United for Life, one of my favorite organizations in Washington, D.C. And he's also written other books, Politics for the Greatest Good, and other things like that. So we welcome Clark Forsythe to the program.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, I'd love to have you, and I've been hoping to... Been looking forward to having you here for quite some time. We've talked with Janine Maxson in the past about AUL and Americans United for Life. We love your work. You guys are doing great work across the country in state legislatures and in Washington, D.C., really putting forth model legislation to try to curtail abortion to the point that we can actually end it. Let's start right away and just discuss the book, Clark, and that is Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade. If you would explain why, after 42 years, did you feel it was necessary to write another book about Roe versus Wade?
Well, because the papers of the justices, the papers of 8 of the 9 justices who voted in Roe versus Wade, they've been released to the public over the last 15 years or so. So this book couldn't have been written 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And what the papers reveal is a completely different history about the Roe versus Wade decision and how it was created and how the justices did it than the public's ever heard before. And when I knew that these papers were available to the public, somebody had to write the book, and I decided I better write it. And it confirms that the justices were legislating. They knew where they were legislating. They had no record of facts. And as I went through the papers, I was just shocked by the things I found.
My guest is Clark Forsythe, and you can go to AUL.org. That's Americans United for Life to find out more. You can also get his book, Abuse of Discretion, on Amazon. Clark, one of the findings in Roe versus Wade is that abortion is safer than childbirth. Can you address that?
Well, that was the kind of central medical premise, the central sociological premise that the justices relied upon in Roe versus Wade. And yet the justices didn't act as they normally should have, because there was no record of evidence. There were no trial in Roe versus Wade or Doe versus Bolton. There were no expert witnesses, and then it went up to the Supreme Court, and the justices should have realized that. So where did they get this notion that abortion was safer than childbirth? It wasn't found by the lower court judges. Well, the justices got it from interest group briefs filed in the Supreme Court for the first time, principally Planned Parenthood Federation of Americas. And although the justices cobbled together some medical citations in the Roe opinion, 7 to be precise, there was no reliable data in 1971 or 72 that abortion was safer than childbirth. The justices had a cobbled together data from, or numbers, let's say, from Eastern European, Soviet bloc countries from the 1950s to prop up this notion that abortion was safer than childbirth. And today, as you know, the claim is still made, and it's based upon comparing the abortion mortality rate, number of women who die after abortion, with the childbirth mortality rate, the number of women who die after childbirth. But what goes into these rates, what goes into the numerators and the denominators, are completely different. I mean, it's like apples and oranges, and so there's no basis for comparison, and there's no basis for claiming that abortion is safer than childbirth.
So this notion that abortion is safer than childbirth is one of the major, supposedly, foundations of Roe versus Wade.
It is.
Does that mean that in order to bring down Roe versus Wade, for the justices to find it unconstitutional, that we would need to prove that abortion is not safer than childbirth? Or is that something that we shouldn't even need to address?
Well, I think we do need to address it. I mean, there's no single silver bullet that's going to bring down Roe versus Wade. It's going to require educational, legal, political, legislative strategy, getting state legislation into the courts and test cases and taking those cases up to the court. But I do think that the claim that abortion is safer than childbirth is incredibly important on a number of different levels. I mean, for one reason, women should not be told that myth.
Right.
Women who are seeking abortions are sometimes told that, or often in the informed consent process, to encourage them to have an abortion and not wait or not have the baby. And they're misinformed if they're told that. That's wrong, and they shouldn't be told that. The public needs to know that abortion is not safer than childbirth, and legislators need to be told that, and the justices need to be told that. So we need a broad educational effort to dispel that myth for all kinds of audiences, and finally, the justices need to know it because they've been reliant upon this myth for 40 years and need to know it was a wrong plank for Roe versus Wade, and they shouldn't rely upon it in future cases.
My guest is Clark Forsythe. He's a senior counsel at the Americans United for Life, and he's written a book called Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe versus Wade, and we're talking about Roe v. Wade and some of the current legislation that's in Congress and in the state houses. Now, I do want to address that with you. Let's jump to this 20-week limit that's being proposed, hasn't come to a vote yet in the U.S. House of Representatives. Explain why it's important that this be passed at this point, and does it address this question of abortion being safer than childbirth or not?
It does. I think there are a number of reasons why a 20-week limit is critical, not only by the U.S. Congress, but also by as many states as possible. Abortion's bad for both, and the 20-week limit points out that abortion is bad for both mother and child. the 20-week limits, and why 20 weeks? Well, because I think that all the available evidence about the court and where the Supreme Court is today, all the available evidence about fetal pain at 20 weeks, all the available medical evidence about how late-term abortions get precipitously more dangerous for women after 20 weeks, all of that evidence, all that we know, comes together to suggest that a 20-week limit is the earliest prohibition that this court might accept. And but the 20-week limit points out the myth that abortion's safer than childbirth, because by the middle of the second trimester, by 16 or 18 weeks, the abortion mortality rate starts to go through the roof. And the best medical evidence today is that the unborn child feels pain by 20 weeks because the child's neurological structure is sufficiently developed. Now, these are just two arguments among many that could be mounted for a 20-week limit, and the 20-week limit helps highlight those problems for the public. So I think for those reasons, among others, I think the 20-week limit is really important.
And so
14 states, as I think you mentioned, 14 states have already passed them, and they are being considered by half a dozen other states this year.
Right. In our own state house here in Columbus, Ohio, they have introduced that bill. My guest again is Clark Forsyth. He is the senior counsel at Americans United for Life. We're talking about Roe v. Wade in his book, Abuse of Discretion. Let's get to some particulars. We got about 2 minutes left in this segment. And specifically, I want you to address, and I don't, it's difficult because I know it's a complicated answer possibly, but there are those in the pro-life movement, particularly those personhood advocates who want to believe that state amendments to the Constitution are the way to go to establish personhood at conception, believe that there's a quote-unquote escape clause, if you will, in Roe versus Wade, that if personhood was established, factually, let's say, that Roe versus Wade collapses because Blackmun kind of telegraphed that. He said that if it were established, that Roe basically collapses. What is your view on that? And we got about a minute. We'll carry it over. But what is your view that personhood advocates, those who believe we should pass these constitutional amendments because of what Blackmun said about personhood being, you know, if it could be established, Roe collapses?
Well, first of all, let me just mention that since I began with AUL in the mid-1980s, I've been working for state legislation to protect the unborn child as a human being or a person from conception. So I believe in moral personhood of the unborn. I believe in legal personhood of the unborn. But very specifically on what you asked, there is no quote-unquote collapse clause in Roe versus Wade. And
Hey, Clark, hold that thought. We'll pick it up on the other side. You're listening to The Mark Harrington Show here on WRFD. You can pick us up online. Go to createdequal.org and click on the radio icon. You can listen to our programs streaming or download on Podbeam and iTunes. We'll be right back with my guest, Clark Forsyth from Americans United for Life.
What do other pro-life leaders think of Mark Harrington and Created Equal? Listen to Lila Rose of Live Action.
Just wanted to say that I stand 100% with the efforts of Created Equal, with getting the truth visually out to students on campuses and inspiring them and equipping them to have that debate with fellow students, to encourage them to really question their support for abortion and encourage them ultimately to see the humanity of the unborn child, the violence of abortion, and ultimately to join our side, which is the winning side, the side of life.
Mark Harrington is a missionary and free speech advocate, and Mark has been on the front line of the debate over abortion for over 20 years. Mark needs your prayers and financial support. Please support Mark and Created Equal by going to createdequal.net or send a check to Created Equal, Post Office Box 360502, Columbus, Ohio 43230. Your gifts are tax deductible.
We're back with Clark Forsythe from Americans United for Life here on the Mark Harrington Show. And we're talking about Roe versus Wade, talking about incrementalism. We're going to address that here with Clark here in a moment. But we want to pick up what we left off with on the first segment, and that is this discussion about the decision of Roe versus Wade and how Harry Blackmun, some believe, telegraphed to, I guess, pro-lifers that if we just establish personhood at conception, Roe versus Wade would collapse. Clark, would you pick up where we left off?
Sure. There's no collapse clause in Roe versus Wade. This is unfortunately kind of an urban legend, a misinterpretation of the decision. I mean, judicial opinions just don't work that way. They don't have clauses that collapse. And Justice Blackmun in that passage wasn't talking about just moral personhood. He wasn't talking about biological personhood or legal personhood. He was talking about what the framers of the 14th Amendment back in 1868 intended for the 14th Amendment. And we can't change the interpretation now or add something back in that they didn't put in. And plus, the whole rationale, I think the other weakness with this misinterpretation is that the whole rationale for Roe versus Wade has shifted. The justices in 1992 in the Casey decision basically completely abandoned the original rationale for the so-called abortion right, and they shifted it to a sociological rationale. Basically, they said that we can't overturn Roe in 1992 because women have come to rely upon abortion as a backup to failed contraception.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the glue that holds Roe together among five justices today. And that's the rationale that I think we have to most directly attack.
Clark Forsythe, my guest. You can pick up his book, Abuse of Discretion, at Amazon. He is the senior counsel at AUL, Americans United for Life. Clark, let's talk about your model legislation and the type of thing that you're introducing and have been in state legislatures. You discuss the concept of incrementalism, and that is what we often term chipping away at Roe versus Wade. Some people in the movement think that's compromise. If they're Christians, they say that's, you know, you can't compromise with evil. And then there are those out there that you should basically get it all at once and won't support anything that doesn't end abortion in one fell swoop. And therefore, they would oppose a 20-week ban because they'd say that's ageist. Or in our state, we have a heartbeat bill. They would say, well, that's not even good enough because you're not dealing with it at conception. Would you address the question between those who, like yourself, believe that we should incrementally chip away and those who think, you know, we just need to not support anything but a complete ban?
Well, this has been a complex debate for many years. And as you know, Mark, from your long experience in the public arena, people, you get reputations and people think all kinds of things, even though they've never talked to you and never, you know, met you and don't know you. And this whole notion of incrementalism is somewhat overblown. Prudence is a real, the real guidance for politics and public policy. And I'm not an incrementalist in the sense that I don't, I'm not a slave to increments. The label has been imposed by those who really don't like it, and I haven't accepted it myself. Prudence is the question, and prudence says our goal should be the moral good in politics, and our goal is comprehensive protection for human life from conception to natural death. And the question is, what are we doing in politics, and what are we doing in public policy to achieve that? Can we achieve it, and can we connect the dots and connect the means to that goal and achieve it? And that's how I'm guided, and that's how AUL is guided. So prudence in any particular situation, let's say the legislative session in Ohio right this year, prudence determines whether an incremental approach is a good one. Prudence should guide what kind of legislation you try for in Columbus this year and in Congress this year. And that, to my mind, raises four questions. Are we pursuing good goals? Are we exercising wise judgment as to what's possible? Are we successfully connecting means to ends? And are we preserving the possibility of future progress when the ideal can't be accomplished right today? And those are the four questions I'm asking day and night, month after month, for 30 years in the work we've been doing. And that's how I'm guided in identifying ways to end abortion and overturn the Roe versus Wade decision.
Clark Forsythe, my guest with AUL, Americans United for Life. Clark, so explain some of the legislation that you are in support of right now in the state legislatures and in the U.S. Congress.
Well, I think our main theme is that abortion's bad for both. It's bad for the mother, and it's bad for the unborn child, obviously. And we need that kind of a balanced educational and legislative message. And by model legislation, we simply mean legislation that's carefully drafted to achieve certain goals. It's been carefully reviewed and studied and written in such a way that it's carefully targeted to achieve the specific goals we're trying to reach. So we are promoting this year 20-week limits in the states, as well as limits on chemical abortions. Obviously, we want to defund abortion at the federal level and the state level, so we want to focus on legislation that will protect the unborn child as a human being, and legislation which will raise the risks of abortion to women and educate women about the risks. And so those are kind of two main themes that guide the legislation that we propose. But, you know, ultimately, as you know, Mark, ultimately it's legislators in the states who make the ultimate decision as to what should be run in their states, what can be passed in their states, and so forth.
What do you think of the concept of interposition, where a governor or a attorney general would just simply enforce a law that was passed in defiance of Roe versus Wade?
Well, frankly, that's been tried. I mean, it's been 42 years since Roe v. Wade, and that was tried immediately after Roe v. Wade. A number of states turned around right after Roe in 1973 and 74 and passed complete prohibitions.
Okay.
Rhode Island did it. Connecticut, I think, might have done it. And so that's been tried.
And what happened?
Well, what was predictable, it went into the fifth. It was challenged in the federal courts. Federal courts struck it down. Supreme Court didn't hear it. The law was never enforced, and it blew away. It was never enforced and never had any impact. And people today can't even remember it.
Right.
When I think of the virtue of prudence, I think of identifying obstacles and opportunities, pursuing opportunities to limit abortion as much as humanly possible, and trying to circumvent the enormous obstacles that we face. And so we're always looking for opportunities to limit abortion. We're always looking to overcome the obstacles that surround us. And I think that's what it means to be prudent.
My guest has been Clark Forsythe. You can go to the website AUL.org. That's Americans United for Life. You can also get his book, Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe vs. Wade. Or if you want to look into more, this idea of prudence and the political lessons of prudence by guys like Thomas Aquinas, William Wilberforce, and Abraham Lincoln, You can pick up his book, Politics for the Greatest Good, which is the idea of limiting social evil when prohibition is beyond our reach. And that's really where we are in the current situation with Roe versus Wade. We'll be back next time. God bless you. God bless America. And remember, America, to bless God.
You've been listening to Mark Harrington, your radio activist, sponsored by Created Equal. For more information on how to become a witness against the evil plague in America, call Created Equal at 614-269-7808, 614-269-7808, or go online to createdequal.net, createdequal.net. Be sure to tune to the Mark Harrington Show next time for your marching orders in the culture war.